Tonight, I'm going to be talking about the variety of meditation practices that are the most common that we have available to us. And if I don't describe what you're doing, don't worry about it. What you're doing has served you so far, and I'm sure it will continue to serve you. But one of the nice things about that there are different meditation practices available is that sometimes our practice gets a little stale, or something comes up in our life and we want something else to address it. Or maybe you just want variety. So these are the fairly standard practices that I've encountered in my 30 years or more of practicing. And the list is concentration, metta, vipassana, or insight practice, then daily life practice, and contemplation. And I'm going to spend probably most of the time on the first three. Concentration is the thing that all of these other practices start with. And when I say start with it, I don't mean that you sit down and boom, you're concentrating. Deb Kerr and I are Dharma buddies. We get together every so often and we'll get caught up on what's going on in our lives. And then at some point, one or the other of us will say, "So how's your practice?" And whoever has been asked first will say, "Well, I spent 20 minutes just with my mind all over the place, and then I settle down." And that settling down isn't really concentration either, but it's close enough. It's close enough, usually, for the other practices to have their benefit. Most teachers recite the elements of practice, starting with set your intention for the sitting. And I think that's a wonderful thing to do. And it's certainly good in retreat, whether it's a half day or a day long or a weekend or a 2-month retreat. Having some idea of what you intend to do is helpful. But Gil Fronsdale, who's my mentor, usually says to me, after I've said I'm going to do blah, blah, he says, "Just see what happens." So it's a good idea. I almost never do it except on retreat. The second practice element is, and this is universally important, it's your posture. And that doesn't mean sitting up rigidly, because one of the traditional postures is lying down. There is an ancient way of doing it which is to lie on your side with one arm on top of the body and the other hand tucked under your face. I've done that. The issue when you're sitting, your posture should be comfortable. It should be sturdy. If you arrange your skeleton in a way where it's holding you up and you don't have to struggle to stay upright, then that will minimize the interruptions and it will maximize the sense of stillness and steadiness. And then the next element for concentration, particularly, is to choose the object of your concentration. What are you going to focus on? When I give meditation instructions, I use the breath. The traditional way of doing it is to pay attention to the movement in the body that accompanies breathing. So the ribs move. They expand and they contract. The diaphragm, that muscle moves, it works. It pulls in the air and then it pushes it back out. A lot of teachers say, when it comes to watching the breath, watch where it comes into the body, which would be the nostrils or the lips. The nostrils are actually pretty hard for most people. And so kind of down the road, as you're building concentration, that is a good option. If you start out paying attention to your belly, then eventually you might want to move and pay attention to something more difficult like the air in the nostrils. My go-to object is the feeling of the air moving down my windpipe and into the bronchial tubes, the airways. Another object of your concentration can be your posture. That is to keep kind of paying attention to whether your body is still. How is it arranged now? Very often, as we sink into our meditation, we lean forward or off to the side, or it's not the way we set up our body to begin with. So checking in with that is one of the objects of concentration. Another is metta. There are these phrases of goodwill that people choose usually, and then review over and over in their minds. Deb selected about 10 years ago to do metta for herself for a year. That was her sole practice, and it just impressed me a lot to be able to go through those same phrases over and over every time she sat for a year. Then there are images. They can be images of an icon. I have a statue of a meditating Buddha that very often I will have that image in my mind when I'm meditating. A lot of people will focus on the flame of a candle. I have students who count continually. They don't stop counting until the bell rings. In Zen, the tradition that I started out in, you counted to 10 and then started over. What you were counting was your breaths. So there are a lot of different objects of concentration, and pick what works for you. If it's going to be a visual image, I recommend starting with something that's familiar, like my statue of the meditating Buddha. Now, there are attitudes that are good to bring to each form of practice. The first one that has a little story to it, I call it this attitude, tranquil and alert. And the story is that Sharon Salzberg and Joseph Goldstein were looking all around the East Coast for a place to have the first Insight Meditation Center. And they were getting tired of it. And finally, they went to Barre, Massachusetts. There was some property out of town that they were going to go look at. But as they drove into Barre, Town Hall had a motto over the door, and it was tranquil and alert. They figured that this was a good omen, that the very aspect of our meditation attitude would be right there on the town hall. As I mentioned in the instructions for meditation that I did give, the process that we go through in establishing concentration is less, continuously less. We keep breathing, although sometimes we relax to the point where we don't need to breathe as much, but we think less, we fidget less, we do everything less except stay aware, tranquil and alert. Whatever we do when we're meditating, we should try to do it with ease. Kind of a contradiction in terms. Try to do it with ease. But try easily. Another important attitude is kindness and compassion toward yourself. Whatever happens in your mind, your body, or the room around you, accept whatever it is and go on. Don't get hung up about it. And be compassionate. If there is an initial tendency to get hung up about it, forgive yourself. Don't worry about it. Just go on. Now, there are three things that Gil Fronsdale taught me early on that help us build concentration. I hate to start out with effort, and I'll tell you why in a moment. The next is interest, and the third is pleasure. I saved the best for last. most of us spend most of our time using effort. Don't do that. It causes tension. It blocks the establishment of tranquility and pleasure, which is really good. And I'll explain it in a moment. And we can use interest to establish concentration. We have these minds that naturally are attracted to certain things that interest us. And what is interesting about the breath? Well, Buddha gave a list, and sometimes I will go through that when I'm guiding meditation. How does this breath feel? Is it long or short? Is the body breathing quickly or slowly? We can go through the characteristics that we notice about every breath that we take, breathing in and breathing out. And the Buddha said, when you're breathing in, know you're breathing in. When you're breathing out, know you're breathing out now. Those are ways to get interested in what seems like a nothing object of your attention. So, pleasure. Pleasure is the third thing we can use. It's an inherent part of established concentration. So be alert for it. Sometimes we slip into concentration without really realizing that's happening. And the thing that can tip us off is that there's this frisson of pleasure, this little bit. I've sometimes compared it to the little drop of sweetness in the flower of the honeysuckle. Deborah, you've tasted it, haven't you? I could tell by that smile. Very few people apparently have done that. Almost every hummingbird has, because that sweetness has sugar in it. And that's just naturally pleasant to all animals. So be alert for that little suggestion of pleasure and appreciate it, savor it. Let it help hold your attention. And as concentration builds, that pleasure will get more intense until eventually, when you get to the various states of deep concentration, there's nothing but pleasure. And it's very intense. So there are steps in building concentration. The first one is to direct your attention to what you chose as the object of your attention. I call this sit. It's like your mind is a puppy and you're saying, there is the breath, sit on it. Go to that object and then hold it there. I call this stay. After you get the puppy to sit, you say, stay. Now, if sitting and staying works, That's great. Enjoy it. Let there be pleasure in that. But there will be what's called a surface zone. And that's like when you're walking into or at the beach into the ocean and you're unbalanced by these waves coming in, the surf. When you're meditating, your concentration will be unbalanced by waves of thoughts. We can't know how long this surf zone will go on. So just keep doing sit and stay over and over and be patient. Like, you know, you're in rush hour traffic. What choice do you have? Be patient. Enjoy it. Sit back, relax. When you establish some concentration, there will be tranquility and pleasure. That's when the stay lasts for a while. You can't rush that. Just welcome that tranquility and the pleasure. And at a certain point, you're going to want to focus on that. If your concentration falters, don't quit. Keep sitting and staying, or transition to another practice, because concentration in a small dose is the foundation of all the other practices. You don't have to be a concentration whiz in a 30-minute set, or even 45, or all day long. It usually takes me about 2 weeks on retreat to get to the point where I'm just floating along. So it's not that common an occurrence for most of us. Metta is the next practice I want to talk about. And you'll probably remember that I said that the metta phrases can be the object of your attention in trying to concentrate. It's repetitive, saying these phrases over and over. And holding the mind on the phrases concentrates the mind, and it inclines your whole personality toward goodwill. So the phrases are, the traditional ones are, may you be happy. May you be free of suffering. May you know your true nature. There are lots of other traditional ones. Most people I know have their own, and I do. Now, it's possible that as you're saying these phrases, feelings will come up. If they're positive, enjoy that. And if negative ones come up, just let them pass away and go back to the phrases. Now, if you want to cultivate loving kindness by doing metta practice, then give more space between your phrases. Really focus on what the words have said and the intention that's inside them. My phrases are, may I feel peaceful. And when I'm doing meta practice, I, as a last resort, I will remember a time when I felt peaceful, so that that feeling comes up. If I'm on the phrases directed at another person, may you feel peaceful and happy. And I'll think of somebody. I really want to feel peaceful and happy. If those feelings don't come up, don't worry about it. Just keep going. Sometimes the feelings that come up are really a backlash. You may be wishing someone well and find out that you're really angry with them. Or you're kind of disgusted. Or your feelings are hurt by something they said or did. If you're practicing to cultivate metta, it's best to just let those feelings enter your awareness, pass through, and pass away. And then go on with the phrases. The final practice I want to look at today is Vipassana, mindfulness, or insight meditation. Once the sit and stay has been fairly steady, broaden that focus to include both the object of the concentration and whatever mental phenomena might be arising, thoughts, feelings. Those thoughts and feelings, again, will arise, pass through your awareness, and pass away. If they don't pass away, then turn your attention somewhere else. And the object that is always recommended, especially if the thoughts and feelings have been difficult, go to metta. Send loving kindness to yourself. So you are allowing your mind to do stuff in Vipassana. You're not rigidly focused on one object of attention. But you don't participate in what the mind does. I think of the mind as like a bubble machine. You know, these bubbles come up and they float through. You don't ask for them. You don't read them off a menu and say, yeah, I want to think about that or have this feeling or that feeling. They just arise. What you want to do is avoid talking to yourself or trying to figure things out. Even if a really difficult emotion has come up, like hurt feelings, don't tell the story over about what the person did. Don't try to imagine what you should have said. Just don't go there. Let it pass through by focusing your attention on the way your body feels when it's having that emotion. I think of this as grounding an electric charge. There's something happening that's kind of shaking the body. So you ground it in the body. You bring this kind, compassionate attention to the way hurt feelings feel. And what invariably happens is that that hurt feeling will start to soften up and expand and float away. By letting this process run its course, you're allowing your mind, body, and spirit to heal. It might not be the last time you have to do some healing from that event, especially if it was a trauma, but you've done some of the healing. And the next time it comes up, it won't be so painful, and you'll heal some more. After those physical feelings have subsided, go back to your object of concentration and then widen the focus again to include whatever's going on in the mind. Always avoid getting pulled into stories. Don't try to rewrite history. That's mindfulness or insight meditation. And why do we call it insight? Because insights will arise. What is an insight? It's an epiphany, that aha feeling you get when you know why you keep doing something that's harmful to yourself. Why do I keep thinking about it when it makes me miserable? That's why. Now I don't have to do it anymore. Insight can arise in any of the three forms of practice that I've covered, plus daily life practice, which is just Vipassana on the go. Take your mindfulness to work with you. Wherever you're going, whatever you're doing, as many moments as possible, come back to mindfulness. A little bit of concentration. Oh, here I am. This is this moment, this breath. What's happening now? That's my main practice now. Rather than going on retreats, I try to be continuously mindful in the day. It's challenging, but fun. The last thing I want to mention is contemplation. That's a very ancient practice. And I think a good example of this is the Zen koan. What is the sound of one hand clapping? You just sort of mull that over. You don't try to answer the koan. If you go in to talk to the Zen priest, oh, I figured it out. You're not going to be earning points. Just let the mind kind of play with a question or a proposition. I think of it as the middle ground between one-pointed concentration, keeping your mind right on the breath all the time, and just discursive thinking, where you go from one topic to another. I think mulling is a good word for contemplation. Anyway, that's it. I'm not going to talk anymore. I would love it if you did. Thank you.